I'd like to start today by acknowledging my mother. She made her transition out of this life 17 years ago, 3 days after Mother's Day, and her memory lives on in my heart and every time I make cornbread in her cast iron skillet. I volunteered to fill in for Reverend Nika today. What was I thinking? There have really been multiple times I've said out loud to myself over the past few weeks as I've been preparing, I can't do this. I have been struck by the magnitude of responsibility I've been feeling to represent all women and all mothers' experiences. So let me just say, I have become very clear that I can't do that. I am going to fail you miserably if I try. If there's anything that I've learned from these remarkable women who we've heard from today and so many other remarkable women that have gone before me and mentored me, it's that my only job in this life is just to be me and to put myself and my love out into the world, to trust that not only I can make change in my little corner, but that the only way I can do it is by allowing me to be myself and to love me and to allow you to love me just as me, sitting here with my dress and my Birkenstocks. I know that Mother's Day is one of those days that can bring up a lot of feelings for people. It sure does me. I acknowledge that we each have our stories and experiences about mothering and being mothered, around being a woman and being in relationship with women, around gender altogether, and please know that I hold space for your own experiences and honor your unique journeys in my heart. My BIPOC friends, I also know I cannot speak your stories, but I do want you to know that I honor them and that I want to know your stories in you and that I will stand as your ally, as a student of your journeys if you will allow me to do so. And please forgive me where I fail you. I also realized I was worried that I was going to alienate and upset the men in our congregation, that I was going to create feelings of guilt, shame, or anger, and I might. It's true. But putting my light under a bushel, squelching my voice, changing my story so that I don't make someone uncomfortable isn't something I choose to do any longer. I lived years of my life doing so. At 60 years old, maybe for the first time in my life, I want nothing more than to just be me and do the best I can. It might be hard to believe, but Mother's Day actually did not start with the modern trappings of capitalism. You know the ones, the $8 greeting cards lined with sappy words that don't quite express the sentiment you'd like to share with your mom, nor the overpriced brunches designed to guilt families into spending a day's and sometimes a week's wages on a meal to honor mom. No, Mother's Day was actually inspired by real women, just like those of you here and online with us today. Many of them gathered around their kitchen tables at home and in local churches. I'd like to introduce you to the woman who is the inspiration for our Americans' Mother's Day. Her name is Ann Jarvis. Ann was born in 1932 and was the daughter of a Methodist minister who, at the age of 18, married the son of a Baptist minister. She lived in the sprawling metropolis of Webster, West Virginia. There are different accounts, but over the course of 17 years of her young adult life, Ann birthed between 11 and 13 children, of which only 4 survived into adulthood. Imagine the grief of carrying, birthing, loving, and then burying 7 or more of your children. Think for a moment about that. It's hard to fathom, right? This was unfortunately common in the mid-1800s, in large part due to epidemics of measles, typhoid fever, tuberculosis, and diphtheria that impacted families across our country during the same century that our country was torn apart by civil war. While pregnant with her sixth child, God bless her, Anne made a decision to do something to impact change in the communities around where she lived. So she started women's work clubs with the intention to teach women how to reduce disease and infant mortality. These clubs raised funds to buy medicines and to hire women to assist in homes where mothers had tuberculosis and other diseases. Anne was living in Virginia, soon to become West Virginia, a part of the country that was being deeply impacted by the Civil War and that was sharply divided by support to the Union north of her and the Confederacy south of her. This was the very part of our country where some of the first conflicts during the Civil War actually erupted. Anne led the women in her work clubs to hold in love and neutrality, insisting that they provide food, clothing, and medical aid to soldiers on both sides of the conflict. She even refused to support a proposed split of the Methodist Church into two separate divisions, one northern and the other southern. You can imagine the stir she created when she was the only person who spoke up to offer a prayer for the first Union soldier who was killed by a Confederate soldier in her community, where a conflict between local men on both sides of the political spectrum led to one man's death. After the war, Anne organized her club members to hold a community-wide Mother's Fellowship Day for veterans from both sides of the war and their families to join together in reconciliation and healing. Despite threats of violence, Anne and the women held the event, and she spoke for the attendees about healing and unity. That event ended with everyone, former enemies from both sides, singing Auld Lang Syne together, and it was reported that the event reduced many to tears. In 1870, just 2 years after Anne organized Mother's Friendship Day, an important woman in our UU history, Julia Ward Howe, a Unitarian, abolitionist, pacifist, and suffragist, who was also a poet and the author of the famous Battle Hymn of the Republic, published a document which became known as the Mother's Day Proclamation. Julia called on women around the globe to unite against war. She wrote, "Women need no longer be made a party to proceedings which fill the globe with grief and horror. Despite the assumptions of physical force, the mother has a sacred and commanding word to say to the sons who owe their life to her suffering." Howe recognized that the life-altering pain of lost fathers, husbands, and sons to war was one of the greatest motivators for women of her time to create a just and peaceful world. Mother's Day was actually started by Anne Jarvis's daughter, Anna, in 1907, 3 years after her mom's death. This was a profoundly personal call for Anna. Anna, being childless, poured her heart and soul into creating Mother's Day, perhaps as a way to transmute her pain for the loss of her mother. And she saw Mother's Day as a way to continue both her mother's and Julia Ward Howe's social justice work. And equally important to Anna, as a way to remind children of their own mother's sacrifices and love, calling one's mother as the person who has done more for you than anyone in the world. Anna pursued a relentless letter-writing campaign to pursue the governor of every state to declare the second Sunday of May, the closest Sunday to her mother's death anniversary, Mother's Day. She even wrote to Mark Twain and President Theodore Roosevelt and anyone she believed who could help her cause. The first Mother's Day service was held at her mother's church in Grafton, West Virginia, 3 years after her mom's death. She sent hundreds of white carnations, her mother's favorite flower, to the celebration in memory of her mom, while she herself gave a speech at another gathering that same day in Pennsylvania. Anna continued writing letters and traveling on her own dime with the intentions to make Mother's Day a national holiday. In 1941, Woodrow Wilson declared the first National Mother's Day as a time to honor mothers whose sons had died in war. Anna's hopes that children would honor their mothers with visits and handwritten letters of love and gratitude was dashed with the commercialization of Mother's Day into a boom of profits for the greeting card, candy, and professional flower growers industries. Anna spent the later years of her life fighting to reclaim the true meaning of Mother's Day as she had envisioned it. She was so impassioned by her cause that she started fights, threatened lawsuits, wrote letters to politicians, issued bitter news releases, organized protests, fought with Eleanor Roosevelt, and demanded audiences with presidents. She spent her modest inheritance fighting the cause. From the outside, Anna seemed eccentric and was labeled crazy. Anna was single and childless in a time in our history where neither were deemed acceptable and women were supposed to be proper. Perhaps loss was an important and impactful theme in her life, and the loss of her personal vision for Mother's Day as a way to honor the memory and the work of her mother was unbearable to her. She spent the last 5 years of her life penniless and in the Marshall Square Sanitarium. The executive director of the Anna Jarvis Museum reported in a 2016 interview with NPR that it was the card and florist people that paid the bills to keep her at the sanitarium. The origins of Mother's Day is anchored in an era when women's rights were being discussed in parlors across our country. The suffrage movement in the U.S. began with the 1848 Seneca Falls Convention, where women's inequalities within the legal and political systems were discussed and debated. A declaration of sentiments was created addressing many inequalities, including women having no right to vote. The Women's Suffrage Parade was held in Washington, D.C. on March 3, 1913. This was the largest political protest in the history of our country at that time, with an estimated 5,000 people in attendance, and it successfully overshadowed Woodrow Wilson's inauguration. Women across America used what they knew and did what they could to champion causes important to them, including creating suffrage cookbooks that were used to spread the word about and raise funds for women's voting rights efforts. It wasn't until 72 years later, on August 18, 1920, that the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote in our country, was ratified. And as we saw in our video story today, it was one woman, Phoebe Burns, whose impact on her son's life made that happen. So as you can see, the origins of Mother's Day is not in opening up a cookbook and making mom breakfast in bed. It's not in greeting cards. It's not even in flowers or fancy brunches. It's actually in women transmuting pain and injustice into service and in organizing collective efforts to change our world. It's in women's spiritual convictions and in women uniting and making meaningful contributions right in their own communities. Now, to bring this story home, let me share a personal and much more contemporary story with you, also about the progression of women's rights in our country. On January 21st, 2017, I boarded a subway on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., packed with women wearing pink hats and protest signs, my 14-year-old proudly in tow with me. I was filled with outrage that Donald Trump had become the president of the United States, my country. I had never been to a protest, but I was outraged. And I felt powerless, and I needed to do something with my anger. The only sensible thing I could think to do was to board a plane and go to Washington, D.C. and to be in the streets with 500,000 women who were also outraged and our allies. I had written an essay at the time that described my reactions to the now famous Donald Trump Access Hollywood tapes. Allow me to share part of it with you now. First, I want to apologize to all the women that have gone before me and toiled tirelessly for rights that I've enjoyed and recognize that I've truly taken you for granted. I'm deeply and profoundly grateful to you. My right to vote, you paved for me. My right to exercise control over my own body and choices, you sacrificed for tirelessly, and you even died to make possible. My rights to be in the workplace without harassment, my rights to health care and child care and time off at work to birth and care for my child and myself, you would not stop until you ensured. Thank you. Thank you. I rose to become the CEO of a company on the very hands up you provided to me. But I must tell you, I have to also honor Donald Trump, because along the way, I bought into some misbeliefs, and he awakened me to my erroneous thinking. As a young woman, I bought into a misbelief that this is a man's world. And that included a blind acceptance that certain things were just part of that deal. While in business school in Texas, I believed I needed to learn golf to get ahead, only to discover that men in my corporate world met at strip bars after work to socialize and make deals, so the golf lessons weren't really going to get me very far. I wasn't invited to the gentlemen's clubs, as they call them. I hated golf anyway, I told myself. Like millions of other women, I just worked harder and longer hours to compete. I believed men were just men, so I told myself being chased around a boardroom table, sexually groped and slovenly kissed by a male supervisor 20 years older than me was just part of surviving. Just avoid him. Keep your head down, and you'll be fine. Women know the drill. And when I became the first female senior executive at a century-old organization, having a board member walk up behind me and grind himself into my backside was just all part of the package. Board politics. So, I need to thank Donald Trump, because something snapped in me the day the Hollywood tapes were outed. A man bragging on national television about sexually assaulting a woman and others describing his actions as locker room talk was beyond shocking to me. Somehow in my mind, in spite of all the places we as a people had crossed over, that was something I was just not able to process. From somewhere deep inside of me, I shattered and then crumbled, and tears began to flow, and they would not stop coming. A rage that I had never allowed myself to feel surfaced, and I wanted to do everything in my power to keep this man from being our president, my president. It was personal, deeply, deeply personal. Women coming forward in the Me Too movement were telling my stories. The list of violations of my ideals as a woman about my body, my sacredness, and my place in the world began to unfold in my girlhood. The male babysitter who I locked myself in the closet to avoid, the driver's education teacher who wanted to take us girls on a side trip to his apartment, the youth minister at church who pressed himself up against us in the pool at church camp. I learned over time that other girls all had stories too. My close friend entrusted me with her secret. She and her sister were being incested by her father. I concluded being a girl was not safe. It meant being vulnerable, and it definitely meant being less than those who were male. And that little girl inside of me just could not reconcile it. So, yeah, I went to Washington. Standing in the streets, I poured my grief and rage out into the sea of feelings shared by the collective voices of 500,000 other women who understood. I think the most important thing I did that day was grieve and mother. Camille was overwhelmed in a crowd, standing for hours of speeches and being a good sport. We came home, my rage turning to self-preservation and the duties of being a single mom. I turned off the television. I disconnected my social media accounts and got back to the business of making change in the small ways I could, close to home. Helping with homework and carpools, going to school to become a therapist, and navigating the healthcare and disability systems for my child who has autism and epilepsy. And about this time, we were learning, also had a pituitary tumor in his brain. I lived through the Trump administration, watching on in horror and repeatedly having my own trauma reactivated. Like so many other people in our community and country that have experienced any degree of violation and marginalization, there were moments I felt helpless and utterly overwhelmed, watching him belittle disabled people, watching his policies separate mothers from their children, watching him disrespect minorities and women. You know all of it. And now we sit here on the precipice of an election facing the possibility that Donald Trump could be our president again. With women's rights to choose having already been stripped away in 24 states across our country and climbing. I don't know about you, but I've been spending a lot of time thinking about all this lately. And those feelings of powerlessness start to creep in and at times overwhelm me. But I acknowledge I need to stay present and engaged. And I'm here asking all of us to get back to the origins of Mother's Day and reflect on what these historical women did to impact change and to allow ourselves to be inspired by their stories and the words of these remarkable women we've heard here today. These women have used loss and suffering as inspiration. They've transmuted their pain into service to others in their communities. They healed, they mothered, they persevered, they united, and they did not back down in the face of opposition. They grounded in their spiritual principles, and they used them as guiding lights to make change. On this Mother's Day, I invite you to think about how you want to put your energies into our community to impact change. I invite you to look around at everyone here and think of everyone in our collective community. We are not alone, and we are not powerless. We can work together to make our world more just, more equitable, and more compassionate. I've shared these words with you before, but they are worth repeating. By anthropologist Margaret Mead, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. We are continually faced with great opportunities which are brilliantly disguised as unsolvable problems. It is during our darkest moments that we must focus to see the light, to recognize the opportunities within the challenges, and to join hands to create a brighter tomorrow. My friends, may it be so.